This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. There are bipartisan bills working their way through the Michigan legislature right now aimed at changing the way juveniles are sentenced in court. According to the bill's sponsors, there are about 600 17-year-olds in the Michigan corrections system. 350 are what are known as juvenile lifers. Well, this got us thinking. What if young people learned effective, peaceful ways of resolving conflicts, ways to settle a dispute without resorting to violence? The Dispute Resolution Center is hoping to combat that so-called school-to-prison pipeline by teaching young people alternative forms of settling conflicts. Belinda Doolin is the executive director. So good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us what the mission of the DRC is.
Our mission is pretty simple and straightforward. We want to provide affordable conflict resolution services and training to all members of Washtenaw County and Livingston County.
So all ages.
All ages.
And you've taken this idea of mediation and teaching mediation into the schools. Why was this so important?
Well, about 7 years ago or so, give or take some time, we read the report published by the ACLU on the school-to-prison pipeline. Personally, in reading that report, it brought back lots of memories that I have of going to school in an urban community, a public school system. And I realized that many people that I grew up with were actually in that pipeline. They had left school for a variety of reasons, did not graduate, and were serving time in jail or prison. So the report itself really touched me. And in the report, they talked about alternative conflict resolution. So my background is dispute resolution. I have a graduate degree in that. And I found it was an aha moment. I found an opportunity to use the skills and tools that I have personally to affect not only another person, but a community. In my opinion, when we can help kids stay in schools, particularly kids who are poor, kids who are disadvantaged, kids with special needs, when we can help them stay in school, we not only change their lives, but we change the lives of the generations to come, because chances are they will have families of their own.
Belinda, you call this a restorative approach.
Yes.
What does that mean?
The restorative approach to problem solving is based on indigenous people. People of ancient times used a more communal approach for problem solving. So we have gone back to that. So it's not brand new. It's something that we're returning back to. And basically what it means is that everyone who is a part of the problem, either they were offended, and or were impacted by the problem, they can come together in an informal setting, a private and confidential way, to talk about the problem, what happened, how it's affecting them, what they were thinking about at the time, and what's really important, what do they need to move forward? Our traditional systems don't allow that kind of conversation to happen. Typically, when you're in the court system, the offending person is sitting separately from the victim, and they don't get a chance to communicate. So in the restorative model, as long as everyone is comfortable with that and volunteers to go forward, they get to have a conversation with each other and not through attorneys and systems and judges. And that's a huge difference in what we do. And what we find, particularly with young people, when they have that opportunity to really think about what they did, they can take responsibility for the impact of what they did, and they want to solve the problem. So everyone participates in solving the problem, which means for the community, they have a solution that they're willing to live by.
So you've been working in Ypsilanti High School. Give us an idea how this is working on the ground level in the classrooms and with the kids.
So I want to clarify. We've worked with Ypsilanti High School for a number of years, and last school year we did not return. They are able to have those resources internally, so that's a good thing for
you
the school district.
Set them up.
I feel that we help contribute to that foundation. But what we did was that when kids were disruptive in class or having a bad day or even fighting, we could pull them away from the group, problem solve, and help them return to class. How this has impacted the school is that we save kids from being suspended, we reduce the number of days they may have been suspended, and then we gave them an opportunity to really make amends, not only with the other student that they were having a struggle with, but also the teachers and administrators who are also greatly impacted by the behavior. Another important piece for the restorative model is that we include the parents. Oftentimes, when discipline is being delivered, the parents parents is notified of what's going on. The restorative model allows the parents of the students to sit in the circle as well and talk about the problem from their own perspective. We learn so
they're learning a lot.
They're learning a lot as well. And the school learns a lot about the family. And something that I did not anticipate, it makes sense, but I don't think I anticipated it. The school and the families reconnect in a different kind of way. So if you learn information about the family, they may be struggling financially. Maybe there's some resources that are not available to them. The school social worker and other members of the circle can start brainstorming what resources are available in the community to help this family that is struggling. More often than not, when the students are struggling, the family is struggling.
So it helps all the people in the school, whether it's teachers, administrators, to look beyond a kid who's troubled.
That's correct.
And get past that label and kind of get a sense of what's going on.
And I think that's an important word you said, Cindy, past the label. We're a very punitive society in a lot of ways. I mean, the headlines are just overwhelming at times for me and how much punishment and how quickly we are to want to punish another person. But the labeling that we see in our school systems, once you're this, you're always that, that is something that we do in other institutions as well. Once you're this, that's what you're always. And we give these students an opportunity to not be that label. The label does not have to define the rest of their lives. And when we think about these kids in the pipeline becoming incarcerated, they never stop being a convict, a felon, an inmate, and that's who they become. So if we think that if we can interrupt this pipeline early, when they're in school, when they're in a more safe community, a support, and create a supportive environment.
And keep them there.
And keep them there. They graduate and they become contributing citizens of the larger community. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Can I know you've worked with lots and lots of kids. I'm curious if there's a story that really kind of sticks in your heart as, wow, we did well.
We did. There are a few stories, but one that really sticks in my heart because it was so personal and so traumatic for us, the staff of the DRC, to hear this. And I have to protect the identity of the young the person, so I'm going to be very careful with that.
Certainly.
A student who was struggling in school, and we know that this student had a poor attitude, poor interactions, antisocial behavior in the school community, and was just constantly struggling. The student did have challenging behavior one day, was challenging the adults in the building, and it was considered assaultive. And the student was arrested and was taken to detention. While in detention, the student wrote a multi-page letter to the principal acknowledging this, the power of the letter was that there was acknowledgement of the bad behavior. There was a plea to get better in life. There was taking responsibility, that accountability that I did something wrong. I affected many people. I've hurt my family, my friends, my teachers. I want to do something different. Please give me a chance. I talked to the student about good choices, critical thinking, decision making. And in that moment, in a heated moment, the student made a bad choice that escalated to an arrest. There is nothing more heartbreaking than seeing a child handcuffed and pushed into a police car, crying, afraid, not anticipating that the behavior in the moment would escalate so quickly and turn into something so criminal, in essence. So this child was taken to the detention center, wrote the letter. The principal of the school read the letter and had a critical decision to make. Do I give this child another chance, or do I let this child serve the time and let the court system deal with the student?
And
the principal decided to do the first thing. I'm going to give this student a chance. And so we worked together to pull together a supportive environment for the student. There was accountability, not only for the behavior that was done, but also for the academic performance. There were people in the circle who said, I will support you. I will tutor you. I will help you catch up in homework and assignments. We discussed the learning environment for the student. Should it be a large classroom in the main wing of the school, or can we put the student in a different place of the building? The building was large enough to make that kind of decision. This student began to improve academically. Socially, the improvement was there, but the academic improvement happened pretty quickly. The student went from about a 1-point average, maybe below, to more than a 3-point average, 3.2
wow.
or 3, somewhere along that lines. And today, that student is now in college. She's really touched our lives and really motivated us to keep going.
Showed you it worked. What would it take to see more conflict resolution in the juvenile justice system throughout the state, but also in classrooms the way you're doing it?
You know, as a service provider, we talk to school administrators all the time. There are so many pressures and stresses for performance inside of the school building, and I know that their purpose for being there is to educate the kids. So we have to spend a lot of time discussing why it's important to adopt these kinds of principles. So what does it take? I think it takes a lot of support from the larger community. That is also financial support. These things are not free. It does cost a little money. However, that money is well spent. On the front end, we help kids get on a better track, and on the back end, we don't pay for their incarceration is the way that I see it. We also have to have support within the systems, our institutions, be it a school, be it the court system. I think in this county, what we're beginning to see is that we're coming together more frequently and talking about the right things. That's important because those of us who are in the role to make decisions or to influence those decisions have a responsibility to this upcoming generation. So that's important to do. The other thing is that these opportunities like this, to be able to talk about it to a wider audience, to say this is not a hidden thing that we're doing in our county, this is something that we can spread across the state, across the nation, I think is important as well.
The Ann Arbor-based Dispute Resolution Center is hosting a film and panel discussion at the Michigan Theater. It's tonight, October 14th. It's about juveniles sentenced to spending their lives in prison without possibility of parole. For information, just visit their website, thedisputeresolutioncenter.org. And we've been speaking with Executive Director Belinda Doolin. Thank you so much, Belinda.
Thank you so much for having me.